Hey, what's up? This is John Norris, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio, Heritage Radio Network. All right, here we are. Roberto's in Brooklyn, Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43, and Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger, all the way from Vermont.
Hey, Jimmy.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great.
It's always good to have you in the studio.
Always good to be here.
You know, we're going to give a shout-out to our sponsors at greatbrewers.com. They're our online connection to the world of craft beer. You can learn more about beer styles and take the great beer test to challenge your beer IQ and find out about the Beer Cloud, a mobile app to help you locate your favorite beers, all on greatbrewers.com. And thank you to our supporters, Good Beer Seal, goodbeerseal.com, 34 New York City Good Beer Bars. All right, here we are on Beer Sessions Radio, Heritage Radio Network. David, what's going on?
Well, everything's in bloom up in Vermont about 3 weeks too soon. Everybody's farming already, and snow's been long gone. It's crazy. Everybody's running around.
I saw a list of some people's favorite beer. I think it was Mike Lavula, who's our union rep, and it's his birthday today. And he's going to do a tasting at Jimmy's Number 43 tonight.
Yeah.
And one of his favorite beers is Alchemist Heady Topper.
Right.
You know, I've never tried that beer.
Oh, you should have told me. I would have brought
it's
you one.
It's one of those cult beers.
Yeah. Yeah, they're doing it in 16-ounce cans, and that's the only way. There's a couple of draft accounts, I think. I think two, but the rest is just 16-ounce cans. And they've got a 15-barrel brew house and a bunch of 30-barrel fermenters, and they just make one beer.
Sounds really good. I'm looking forward to trying it.
Yeah.
Talking about cult beers and cult brewers, we've got a great guy here. They know him as Chief. It's Jeff O'Neill from Peekskill Brewery. How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing great, Jimmy.
So you're up in Peekskill.
You bet.
You know, if you're listening from in UK or Michigan or somewhere else, there's a tiny brewery on the Hudson River north of New York. It's called Peekskill Brewery. And this guy, Jeff O'Neill, you might have heard of Ithaca Flower Power and Ithaca Brewery. He was there for a number of years and helped build that up. And he's come down to a tiny little brew pub, and he's really shaking things up in the New York area. Everybody's talking about him. We've got Jen and Ben from Queens Kickshaw, a great little bar in Queens. Have you guys heard of what Jeff's doing at Peekskill?
Yeah, we just recently heard about Peekskill Brewing actually through Mike Love. Coffee Labs Roasters. He just recently made a beer with Witch's Brew, which is Mike Love's house blend of coffee.
Wow. Well, Jeff, I'm not going to ask you too many questions, but I want you to tell us what you're doing.
Well, we are about to start cutting floor drains and pulling utilities into our new space. We're going to go from being Westchester County's smallest brew pub to Westchester County's largest brew pub.
That's a surprise. I thought the whole thing
well,
was just going to stay this little brew pub
only
forever.
Brew pub, but I guess we're both already. So, yeah, we took possession of this great building, Riverside building, right by the train station in December. And we just had our city planning board meeting in the last couple of weeks. City is in love with the project, and everything looks like systems are go. And we should be brewing there by the end of June or beginning of July.
So, Jeff, I mean, I've been to the space, and why don't you walk us? It's going to be a pretty amazing setup in terms of all the different layers and levels of the space. You want to walk us through how it's all going
to
be?
Well, sort of the best thing to understand is that the building is a four-story stone building that faces the river, and each floor is about 3,200 or 3,400 square feet. So each floor is going to have sort of its own purpose, ultimately. But first and foremost, we're going to be a brewery. So as you enter the building, you'll have a great view of the entire operation. The actual brew house will be right in your front of your sight. And then as you go up into the brewery or into the building, into the restaurant, which will start at the second floor, you'll see the milling operation. And then when you go to the third floor, the lounge area, you'll see our cool ship. And then up on the roof, we're hoping to have some, you know, hops growing and lots of different, you know, layers is a great way to describe it. The way we're thinking is that we can appeal to sort of every layer of beer appreciator.
Right. And you're going to be hoping to bring people out from the city.
Yeah.
Because you're right next to the train.
Yeah. So we
And it's about an hour and 15 minutes?
Well, it depends on what train you're on. It took us about an hour and five to ride down today. But a quicker train is 47 or 48 minutes, something like that. But we're hoping people will make a day of it and, you know, pick up a couple of bottles in Grand Central, drink them on the ride up, have lunch with us, or lunch at Birdsall and dinner with us.
Nice.
So we're looking for some beer tourism.
Is this a surprise? I thought you guys were just going to stick with the brew pub and keep making this little beers.
Well, we're going to be like probably 30% sold in house, and then the rest will be draft out to the greater New York market. So it's sort of a hybrid model, and we'll be a pretty good sized brew pub when it's all said and done.
What are some of the goals that you have in mind with this new brewery?
Well, really, we want to focus on providing fresh local beer every day of the week. We're gonna tailor our sort of draft lineup to be very food friendly, and we're looking. You know, there's been such a boom in restaurants treating beer in the appropriate way. We're gonna focus a lot on that because we'll still be fairly limited in volume. We'll be able to do about 3,000 barrels. And maybe 1,000 will be sold on site and 2,000 off. That's only 4,000 kegs, and when you think about it, that's 80 kegs a week. Not that many accounts that we can really support. So we're really going to focus on the relationships and the freshness and draft quality.
So when you go to a place like Peekskill, like what intrigued you about? First of all, you're moving closer to the city. What are you going to do differently at Peekskill as opposed to what you did, say, at Ithaca or, you know, further back?
Well, we'll be far less locked into particular brands because we'll have that brew pub sort of ethos and flexibility where we can do stuff appropriate for the season. We can do whatever strikes our fancy at the time. We can, you know, we're going to try to have 14 or 15 house beers on at a time. So some of those will become available locally. We're just going to try to roll with it and see what hits. I mean, we're going to lead with three draft offerings, an IPA, our Hop Common, which is our steam-style beer, and a draft sour. And we'll see what people like and take it from there.
And you're going to send some to the city as well? Or
City's going to be our prime,
okay.
Prime marketplace, yeah.
Great. And Jeff, over time, are all these beers going to be your style? I mean, are you going to recreate recipes? Or are you going to keep making some of the...
Yeah, no recipe is set in stone in my world.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, no. There's no perfect beer. It can always be a little bit
better. So how do you brew? I mean, how does that work for you?
I brew largely by feel and by sort of intuition. I'm not the greatest scientific brewer in the world. I sort of engineer backwards from how I want stuff to taste. And so it's more a lot more like cooking than it is like science for me. So, you know, we just sort of work with the ingredients that we have and try to make the best beer that we can.
So sometimes like midway through as you're tasting, do you make adjustments?
Usually not in the middle of a brew day, but that's kind of one of the benefits of being small. And a batch for us right now is only 12 or 14 kegs, so it only lasts a couple of weeks before you're brewing it again and trying to take another shot at it.
Wow, so that's going to be awesome. So I want you to deliver to me. Every couple
we'll
weeks, I got
can.
A different
we'll
style, a different version.
Yeah, well, Mike. Like I say, we're trying to streamline it, so we're offering three drafts to the market, and then we'll have some. You know, we'll do a lot of events, of course, around the city where we'll do more. We're going to try to sort of focus on when we do events to bring the Peekskill experience to you, in turn motivating people to come see us.
If I were a new brewer and I wanted to learn from Jeff O'Neill, where would you send me before you let me work for you? In the whole world, where would I go and what would I learn?
Oh, boy.
It's a tough question.
That's a tough question. I mean, the truth is I'd rather have a guy that had been in a mid-sized regional brewery and knows the whole scope of, I'm sorry, a guy or a gal, who knows the whole scope, the big picture, sanitation, materials in to materials out. It's usually not a home brewer that we're looking for. It's somebody that has had their feet in the boots for a while and understands, you know, the sort of 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. hot and wet hours that we keep.
And do you think it's important that a new brewer goes first to a brewing school?
Not necessarily. I mean, there's a lot of great brewers that just wedge their foot in the door at the right time, at the right place, and learn from somebody who really knows what they're doing.
I'll tell you,
I'd love to hire somebody from Omegang, if you're listening.
Yeah. So you want to, okay, that's your target. All right, you're going to take the guys that know how to do.
That's an inside joke with Phil.
The nowhere to go. There's nowhere. Or how about an enthusiast? If I said, Jeff, you know, I want to catch up to your palate. How about, this is a better question. Where would I go? Like, pick three places in the world that I should go and drink beer for like 2 years before I could be the same as you.
Portland, San Francisco, and San Diego.
Wow. What? And Portland, I started Portland, Maine, or Portland?
No, sorry, Oregon.
Oregon?
Yeah, although I really love what Allagash does too. Yeah, I started brewing in California, and I still am partial to those sort of overly hoppy beers.
So the West Coast. So do you think the West Coast is ahead of the East Coast?
Ahead, I don't know if I'd say that, but different. It's a different approach. It's a different market.
What do you think, Dave? I mean,
it's definitely different. Yeah, and I in the past I would have said maybe the West Coast was a little bit ahead, and now it's just different. You know, there's a lot of good breweries here on the East Coast now, and you know, about to be another. Well, actually, right now, and actually, what are we drinking right now?
This is our Irish Breakfast Stout that we released last month for St. Patrick's Day, and as Ben said earlier, this is brewed with very freshly roasted beans from Coffee Labs in Tarrytown, which is a well-known Westchester coffee roaster. And I did something a little different to extract the coffee flavor in this, and I actually did a cold steep. Instead of using water, I used the fermented beer. So we filled a keg with 10 pounds of coffee beans, and then filled that keg with beer, kept it in the cooler for a week, and then blended it back into the tank. So you get a lot of the aroma and a lot of the coffee character without any of the harshness.
Is there caffeine in this beer?
Sure.
Thank feels God. Good. This is what God. I want. I always want to have coffee around this time of day.
So it's hard to.
But I don't want to drink coffee.
I'll say sure, but it's hard to quantify exactly how much. It's a really non-traditional way. You know, nobody makes coffee this way in a laboratory.
You might get in trouble for this.
Well, I've been in trouble for this. We made a beer at Ithaca a few years back that was red flagged by the FDA when they started to assert some authority on the food production side of beer. There was a little concern, let's say, about a couple of malt-flavored beverages that had synthetic caffeine added to them. And I think our beer had just been approved by the state of New York, and the state of New York was part of the lawsuit. This is kind of a long story. State of New York was part of a multi-state lawsuit filed to shut down alcohol and caffeine combination in brewing. And I had to write a detailed report to the FDA on our methods, our methodology, our assumptions on how much caffeine was in it. And even in a highly coffeed beer, you're talking about 25 milligrams maybe in a serving, which is a quarter of a cup of coffee, something like that.
Well, it tastes good.
Yeah, it tastes great.
Yeah,
yeah, it's more about more about the coffee flavor than the impact with a beer.
And Ben, you guys do coffee and beer, don't you?
Yeah, we do.
Actually, Queens Kickshaw in Queens.
And coffee and beer go so well together, actually. It just reminded me of something that sort of happened by accident when we first started putting cold brewed coffee on tap from actually Coffee Labs Roasters cold brewed coffee. And we weren't really sure if it was going to work. We had to do all this kind of experimentation to get the coffee to come out of the tap line, but we put it through a tap line that had recently been used for a barley wine, and for about 3 weeks the barley wine was detectable in the cold brew, so much so that a few customers really noticed it and they would not drink it. We had to have a separate jug of coffee.
You
just
run cold brew coffee through your tap line.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Like an iced coffee.
We keg it. We basically,
Push it with CO2 or
no. Actually, CO2 would make it taste like garbage. Literally.
Yeah. So like nitrogen. Like what do you use?
Nitrogen.
Nitrogen.
100%.
Wow.
You know anybody else do that?
Yeah. Actually, there's a few other people that are doing it now.
Wow. And they're doing it with wine too. So yep, that's become. There's a lot of good kegged wine now.
And with wine, what gas do they use for wine?
Nitrogen.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
We actually used argon at first, because we had to kind of, you know, we used the G-Mix at first, which has some nitrogen in it, so we wanted to make sure, we had to rule out the CO2 element, so we did by using argon, and then we figured out, okay, nitrogen's going to work, which is a little bit cheaper and safer.
Well, you guys are cool. I mean, when I first met you guys a couple of years ago, and you're at Jimmy's Number 43, and I'd spent about half an hour talking to you to try to talk you out of opening a bar.
And don't ever listen to Jimmy.
He told us not to? No, he just told us to get a good beer seal if we were going to open a bar.
Yeah. But we did have that talk, and you guys stuck with it. And I read your blog, and you built everything for yourselves. And tell us about how you opened that place, because it's pretty neat.
Oh, wow. Where would we begin? I mean, you know, we built it ourselves with our own hands, me and my wife, Jen. You can look at our Facebook page. You'll see Jen, you know, operating all kinds of machinery. Power tools and everything. We were there 100% of the time building. It was amazing.
And what do you serve? You guys serve beer, coffee, grilled
coffee
cheese?
In the morning, grilled cheese sandwiches, beer bar at night. We kind of try to morph, you know, throughout the day through those different styles of service as well to keep it something that's actually workable.
There's a lot of people, I mean, I know, you know, talk about maximizing your rent to be able to fill the place in the morning with coffee and then turn it into a beer bar at night. Like, what are the obstacles to doing that? Because I think a lot of people would like to do that.
Yeah, and I think the hugest obstacle is the service, really, because people come into a coffee shop expecting one thing, very different than when they walk into a restaurant or a bar. So it was, I can't say for sure that we've actually perfected the service or the process, but it's something that we're constantly aware of, the fact that when people walk in the door, they don't really know what to expect because we're wearing a lot of different hats at the same time. So we feel that the most important thing is just to make sure that that customers feel acknowledged immediately and that we are there to help them through the process and figuring out how to serve them best.
And also, I mean, it's two very separate businesses. I mean, it's, you know, coffee has its whole setup and, you know, behind the bar with the things that you need for that glassware. I mean, it's all different. And then you sort of move over into selling beer at night, and that's a whole other setup. Like, how do you do...
Well, the design of the bar is set up basically in three stations. So there's a coffee station in the front, closest to the door. In the center of the bar is where you know, behind the bar, there's the bottle coolers and the kegs right in front of that. And then off to the side is the kitchen. Actually, it's an open kitchen as well. So we wanted to advertise all three elements right there behind the bar. And actually have the cooks be part of the service as well, so that service was so important within each different category.
Wow, cool. Well, hey, let's take a short break. We're going to be back with we're talking about Craft Brewers Conference on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're out here at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and we're talking with Jeff O'Neill from Peekskill Brewery, Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger, and Ben and Jen from Queens Kickshaw in Queens, New York. David, Vermont, man. Tell me something good about Vermont. You live the life up there. You got a farm. You hang out with breweries. Your buddy, Chad Rich, what's the new place that he opened?
Prohibition Pig. It's
what town is that in?
That's in Waterbury, Vermont. It's in the old Alchemist brew pub space, which got flooded out during Irene and got rebuilt with insurance money. And Jen and John Kimmick decided not to continue with the brew pub because they already had the cannery up and running. And they couldn't get insurance to have a brew pub in the basement anymore. So they still own the building. Chad rents it from them. And he's got a great North Carolina barbecue, 24 taps. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And it's been packed.
That's terrific.
An hour wait for
And Jeff O'Neill from Pixel, he's brought us a couple growlers of some of the beers he's making.
I think this is his West Coast double IPA.
This is it, West Coast style.
Here we go.
All right. And we've got a guest on the air. We're going to talk with someone from the Brewers Association about the Craft Brewers Conference. Bradley Latham. Bradley, are you on the phone, buddy?
I'm here, Jimmy. Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you? So you're the events coordinator for the Brewers Association, correct?
That is correct.
All right. Could you give us a quick overview of the upcoming Craft Brewers Conference in San Diego?
Yeah, so we've got the Craft Brewers Conference coming up at the beginning of May at the Town and Country Resort in San Diego. It's actually the third time we've returned to this property itself, but it's turning out this is our largest conference yet. We're expecting around 4,500 attendees, 2,900 of them full conference. We're up to 250 exhibitors this year, and that's a 25% increase over last year, which also we've got like 150 exhibitors on the waiting list, so we weren't even able to get everyone in this year. So it's definitely big is the word this year.
Well, I know our good friend Steve Hindy from Brooklyn Brewery is one of the keynote speakers. What are some of the other programming highlights for the conference?
One thing we've added this year that's just new is these mentoring roundtables, which is a free-form exchange of ideas where breweries that we've got sent to, I think we've got eight different ones at one time, can get together with like-minded brewers of the same category. Like there's some for brew pubs under 700 barrels per year, some for nano breweries, some for people who are trying to sell more cask ale. So that is, they're kind of smaller. It's not meant to be these 500 people sessions. It's the smaller, more intimate settings where people can get together, ask questions, and have a free-form exchange of ideas. That's something exciting we're looking at this year.
Bradley, there's a question I've been dying. Bradley, I want to ask you a question. I've been dying to ask you this all day. Okay, at work, you work for the Brewers Association, and Charlie Papazian is your president, right?
Correct.
He's awesome. Do you get to drink beer at work?
We do have a kegerator and a little bar set up in our office, but not till the end of the day.
All right. Well, we're drinking an awesome beer from Jeff O'Neill from Peekskill. That we're just doing that right now. So
we get to drink while we work.
Yeah,
actually.
Man. So
we'd love to have your beer on draft sometime.
Who's paying you right now,
Jeff? Have you been to any craft beer conferences before?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Are you going this year?
Yep.
So what's it like for you as a brewer? I mean, there's 4,000 people. I mean, like, what do you guys really do there?
You'd be surprised at the amount of business you can get done on the trade show floor. In fact, right now, because we're in the middle of building out, there's a number of vendors that I need to block out time with to sort of finish up specifications on stuff that we're buying. And it's really, you know, it's like, you know, a kid in some kind of a shop, really.
There's expos, machinery. Yeah. Like, what... Bradley, what are some of the top like people at the expo that you have? You know, what kind of products are they selling?
There is anything you can think of if it comes to the brewing process, from your basic raw ingredients to we have people with entire canning lines set up, like in use, so you can see keg feelers. We have people who are supplying the kegs. There's even brewery insurance, so it's across the gamut completely of anything that you could do to start or run your brewery.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I saw that you're doing a craft beer bar symposium for the first time.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. I know you guys had talked to our director, Paul Gatz, about that last year because we had talks on it previously. So this year we've come together and kind of focused a conference within a conference on craft beer bar owners. So this is kind of the work of... Publican Dan Lanigan and Stone Brewing Company. So this is his first year, but it's kind of the same thing we started a few years ago with the craft beer wholesalers. It's people who are, this is for bar owners who are selling lots of craft beer and to get together and share ideas and see what they can do to better their business.
Awesome. So Dan Lanigan, that's pretty cool. So he owns, you know, like Lord Hobo in Boston,
Alewives.
How did you end up working with him? Because he's not a brewer. So did you guys reach out to him, or did he reach out to you guys?
It was actually, he worked with Stone Brewing, Greg Cook at Stone Brewing. It was kind of their brainchild. He worked with them. And Dan Lanigan's actually doing a presentation as well at the conference.
Oh, cool. Good for him.
Terrific. Dave, you've been to some craft brewers conferences, haven't
you? Yeah, I think I've been to the last four.
So you, as a bar owner, why did you go?
Same thing, sort of one-stop shopping. I mean, I can, you know, we do a lot of events, and it's great to be able to see everybody face-to-face. They're all there, and you just basically, it's like running the gauntlet when you, you know, wherever the hotel is, and you come downstairs in the lobby, and there's like 1,000 people milling around. You can basically find everybody, and it's just, it's like more personable, you know. So I can, you know, get my whole event schedule done in those 4 days, basically.
That's awesome. I'd like to say that the networking is such a huge aspect of the conference.
Yeah, it's giant. I think for everybody.
Bradley, have you noticed any trends in craft beer this year, or anything, any special figures that you want to share with us?
So we were up, craft brewers were up 13% by volume in 2011, and it's looking like the same growth rate so far for 2012. Another big thing we're seeing is rapid growth in brewery openings. There's been over 400 breweries opened in the past 2 years alone. And two-thirds of these openings are microbreweries, and many of these are nanos, which is a big trend as well, because pretty much anybody can start a brewery with limited space in that aspect.
And I think last year there were, I think you guys said there were like 600 breweries in the works at the event last year. What's the number this year?
I'm not exactly sure on firm numbers on that one. My apologies.
It's all right.
That's okay.
I know there are a couple of hundred nanos we have going on right now, but just for in planning, I haven't seen firm numbers on that one.
That's great. Well, we're really happy that you got to call in with us, Bradley. Anything else you want to say about the conference before we sign off?
Yeah, I'd like to say just that on the even number years, we have the World Beer Cup is in conjunction with that one. So that's really, I enjoy that immensely, and it all culminates with the World Beer Cup Award ceremony at the end of the conference on Saturday, May 5th. And this is, that quite possibly could be our largest competition yet. We've got almost 4,000 entries from all around the world. And 45% of those entries are international this year.
Wow.
And we have 218 judges from around the world, and 66% of those are actually international. So the World Beer Cup year, we really have a larger international presence at the conference. And it's really great to see, because not only are brewers getting to share information and ideas with each other from around the country, now they're getting to see others from around the world.
Wow, that's really awesome. Hey, man, thanks so much, and this is good for our listeners. So if you're aspiring to be a brewer or a bar owner or be in the industry, definitely for next year you should consider going to the craft brewers. Where is it going to be next year, Bradley? Do you know?
Actually, we're out east in D.C.
We're going to have to get you down.
Woo-hoo!
Jimmy, we're going to have to get you
all
there.
All right, I might go
we'll
next year. All right.
Convention Center, so we'll have possibly twice as many exhibitors, so it should be a really good time, and that's going to be actually at the end of March in 2013.
That's going to be amazing. Thanks so much, Bradley.
You guys. Appreciate it.
We're going to keep talking on the show. Okay, have a good one. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
All right. So cool. It's a little bit of a snippet of the beer world out there. I didn't know how 4,000 people for a craft brewers conference.
Yeah, it's at least doubled in the last few years, I think.
It is. I mean, and you see, speakers in that opening reception is like, you know, two congressmen. I mean, it just gets, you know, the craft beer industry is just getting bigger and bigger and more powerful, which is great.
Well, wow. For me, it's really cool validation that the international brewing community is so
coming to our conference.
Yeah.
Wow. It's true.
Sort of through the looking glass.
And what are you going to do besides networking? I mean, are you going to make any presentations there, Jeff? Are you going to bring samples of your beer?
No, it's nothing like that. It's more catching up with old friends and finishing up the shopping, and it's, you know, flies by. It's just 2 or 3 days before it's over. It's really the site where they're having this one is sort of a self-contained resort, so you don't get out too much. You get out for a couple of events to the local pubs, and they do some brewery tours or they organize buses and stuff. But it's more like
how about that tiki pavilion?
Yeah. Oh boy, yeah, that was something.
Why don't
else.
You describe that to people?
So last time around, 4 years ago, when they had it at the Town and Country Resort, I think is what the place is called. I believe Jeff Bagby did it mostly by himself. They had 100 California beers on draft at the bar, and it was order by number. Wow. And of course, it's a free bar,
For attendees.
And it's set up by one of the poolside, and it's everybody who's anybody is there all night long.
That's why nobody left.
I might have to crash. Wow. Well, and you, in terms of what you're shopping for your brewery, what are like some key items that you're still looking for?
Well, we're still finalizing some of the fit out for the bar. We're shopping for a growler filler draft line setup, which is can get remarkably complicated. We're going to be dispensing beer from the first floor up to at least the second. So we need to really devise a pretty good system where we're not wasting beer, serving the beer ideally. And, just some other odds and ends, keg washing equipment and, chemicals and stuff like that. It's just, like I say, it's just about maintaining the relationship.
Dollar-wise, just if you don't mind me asking, what are you guys going to spend to open the brewery?
Oh, boy.
What ballpark figure?
A lot?
More than $1 million.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a lot of money.
But it's also building out a restaurant. We're putting in a 15 barrel brew house, which is it's not $1 million on its own. It's probably $400,000 of stainless steel and then a lot of construction costs.
And you think the environment up there is good in Peekskill?
Seems to be.
You're loving it, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
It seems to be, we do a better week than the one before every week, so.
I almost feel like in every community, every area is really ripe for having a really good brew pub and brewery. And hopefully it stays.
Well, there's already a great brewery in Westchester that's not a brew pub. And, we...
Which one? Captain Lawrence?
Yeah, we just hope to continue in Scott's footsteps.
All right.
And as I mentioned earlier, that Westchester beer tourism is really high on our priority list. Like, we'd love to see people, rent a van and go to Captain Lawrence and then come to our place. Those sorts of things. We're really going to try to co-op a lot of that.
I think we could be part of that.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, hey, we're going to take another short break. We'll be back in a few minutes here on Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network.
I used to drink. I used to smoke, drink, and that's the hoochie coo. I used to smoke and drink, and that's the hoochie coo. Oh, yeah. But now I'm standing on this corner praying for me and you. That's why I'm saved. I'm saved. People, let me tell you about a kingdom come, you know I'm saved. I'm saved. I'm gonna preach unto you. Deaf and dumb, I'm in that soul saving army. Beating on that big bass drum. Oh yeah. I used to cuss. I used to fuss. I used to cuss. Fuss. And boogie all night long. I used to cuss and fuss.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm here with Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger and Jeff O'Neill from Peekskill Brewery. Jeff, what beer are we drinking right now?
Right now we're drinking the very first batch of Double Standard IPA. And I filled this growler actually from the fermentation tank this afternoon. This is not quite... we'll keg this next week just before Tap New York. And the name Double Standard comes from our newly sort of decided upon flagship beer name for our IPA, which we're going to call Eastern Standard IPA.
It's really nice. What hops are in this beer?
As I just told Dave, in the kettle are Warrior, Nugget, and Chinook, and Citra and Simcoe in the dry hop.
So you're going to take some beers up to the Tap New York event?
Yep, that's next weekend.
So that's a big event. So it's like, what is it, just New York State
just
Brewers?
Just New York State Brewers. I think they make a dispensation for Rammstein for High Point.
I remember last year, the surprise was that two new upstarts, Crossroads up in Athens, won Best Hudson Valley Brewery, and Barrier on Long Island won Best New York Brewery. And to me, that was a portent of change, that there were a lot of new small breweries in New York, and that got me excited. And I'm rooting for you.
Yeah, well, we think the Hudson Valley is sort of becoming a beer mecca, just beyond even Westchester, with Crossroads, and Newberg Brewing is opening next weekend as well, I think. Also, I've heard that there's a brewery in Beacon. I just heard that.
Oh, really?
Somebody told me today that they're open, but I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah, there's also a lot of new breweries that we're hearing about that are really being made at like places like Butternuts and stuff. And mm-hmm. I'm really more behind you guys. The guys who actually have a brewery and doing it yourself. And I know that's controversial. You know, not everybody has a brewery set up, but I really believe in the brewer's craft, and I think that I would rather support you.
Well, without beating up on guys that have their beer contract brewed, it can be a great way to get into the game, to get your feet wet and your brand established. We've seen Brian from Stillwater do a great job with this, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and maybe some of the other places you're thinking about are not doing this gypsy thing, but not everybody has.
And maybe there's more than we don't realize, like McKellar. There's a lot of guys that are either collaborating or someone else is making their beer.
Sure.
It's
all in the details. I mean, it's in the attention to the details. And there are some great beers that are co-packed and some that are not, right? So it's case-by-case basis is how I like to go.
All right. And Ben, what do you want to say? You guys have been sitting there so great.
Well,
Queens Cake Show
on
Queens.
On that same note about new breweries, there's actually a new brewery that's going to be opening up.
In Queens.
In Queens, yeah. Single Cut Brewery. We tasted some of their stuff recently, and I think it's going to prove
Single
to be
cut
fantastic.
Single Cut Beersmith, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Right.
Where's this brewery going to be?
In Astoria.
Oh, wow. I thought he was looking upstate or something.
No.
Jimmy,
no.
You sent me the business plan for that brewery.
Did I?
You did.
He told
I thought he was
open.
Looking up in Rockland County or something.
No.
I don't know anything.
He's from Queens.
Wow.
Yep. So Queens has been somewhat neglected for a while.
But yeah, it's so funny that, a giant borough, 2.2 million people and no brewery. So
here.
Yeah.
Here.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Well, actually, there is one already. We were talking about Beyond Kombucha.
That's right.
Earlier, and technically they are a brewery.
They have a brewery license.
Yeah. Okay. They don't brew beer. They brew kombucha at its normal strength alcohol, which is above the legal 0.05%, as well as other higher alcohol versions of kombucha.
Do you know
as
what
well.
Like scale? What size?
What size?
Their tanks.
Oh gosh!
Like, how big are the batches?
So fast. No. I mean, literally, when I first visited his brewery, he just literally had one mm-hmm. fermenter. He had just gotten it, and he's growing really fast. He just signed a contract with Union, so he's ramping up quickly.
So if you're making alcoholic kombucha, do you use the kombucha mother to ferment with a grain?
For the primary fermentation, you use the mother to make just a normal straight kombucha, and then I'm not the expert, but what he then adds, ale yeast or champagne yeast, I think is what he's going to be using for his next batch of a maple and vanilla rooibos tea kombucha, and so he adds, the champagne yeast and sugar, lets it eat it up, and boom. Huh. This next one's going to be up to 8%, he says.
He's got really happy mothers.
Yes.
what other local companies are you working with at Queens Cake Show?
What other local companies?
Like, I don't know, coffee companies you talked about?
Coffee labs up in Tarrytown. We try to use a lot of local vendors when possible. We get our mozzarella from a place down the block, and we get a lot of ingredients from local stores like Ivar, which is a roasted red pepper spread from Macedonia. Queens is really diverse. There's a lot of food diversity in our neighborhood.
Why did you pick Queens to open? Is that where you live?
Yeah, we live there.
In Astoria?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw a great blog post about, what's it called? It's called something, Why Leave Astoria? Is that the
Why name? Leave Astoria? Yeah. It's a great local blog. My wife, Jen, can tell you a little bit more about that.
Yeah, Why Leave Astoria is basically it's a great community resource, and it's open to anyone who wants to submit, something that they've written, photos and event postings, and it's something that has actually been really useful to us in terms of getting the word out about our events and what we've done, and a lot of people kind of follow us through that site as well.
That's cool. I saw a post about, you had photos about how you opened your place and you did all the work yourself. Jen, come on, tell us. I love when people come on. Jen came on and said, I'm not talking, but I knew that she had all the stories to tell. So,
We opened Kickshaw about a year, just over a year ago, and we felt that there wasn't really a nice, coffee shop where people could sort of hang out, a place where we would feel comfortable. And so that was the impetus. And also the impetus was we had just planned a really great wedding for ourselves, and we figured that we like throwing parties, and we love being hospitable to people and welcoming people into our home. So that was the heart of opening Kickshaw.
So, but having good craft beer on draft, that was a big part of your plan too, right? From the beginning, or did you adopt
Yeah, from
that
the beginning, always? That was definitely that. Yeah.
So, like, what do you have on draft tonight?
Tonight, what do we have on draft at the moment? I think we've got Evil Twin Brewing Imperial Biscotti Break.
You know, he just moved. He just moved to Williamsburg.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Him and Brian Strumke, both.
Yeah.
Are now living.
Brian.
Yeah. No, they were in the other night, and he just moved his whole family.
Uh huh.
To Williamsburg.
Wow, that's
like
nuts.
Crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got High and Mighty Fumata Nera, which is a smoked rye IPA on draft right now, as well as a Carton Brewing Boat Beer. But actually, you want to talk about these beers right now?
Yeah, what you guys made a little surprise for us.
Yeah, so. This is kind of a little thing that we're trying.
Jen, you want to tell us about it? Come on. Tell us about it, Jen.
Let Jen tell you.
Well, we basically outfitted a wine preservation system. Ben had this idea that, you know, why couldn't it work with beer? And so he worked with a company that produced this mechanism. And basically what we're doing with this experiment is seeing if it actually works. You know, what happens when you open a beer, you pour a glass one night, you repressurize it.
So you mean a bottle of beer?
Sorry, a bottle of beer. Yeah. You repressurize it and open it up later that night or a few days later and see if there is any discernible difference in taste and mouthfeel and all that kind of stuff. So we're kind of in the process of...
So you're testing it on us?
Testing. Yeah, exactly.
Good.
So let's go. Come on.
So
let's
basically try it. What we've got here are three different beers. We've got Weyerbacher Tiny. We've got Guzzeri Tilquina L'Ancienne, as well as Saint Somewhere's Lectio Divina. So we have basically a lambic or a goose, and we have a Belgian stout, and we have a Belgian
Saison.
Strong pale.
Yeah.
Saison, yes. And so these, this one, this, let's see, the Saison, we opened on the 9th of April. We opened all of these for the first time on the 9th. I think this Tiny, I got really excited and opened it again a couple days later. So all of these beers have been open for well over a week, and they've been repressurized with CO2. And the methodology for this is basically we just kind of put a little CO2 into the bottles, and then we put these... caps on it, and then put more CO2 into it under pressure, and it's basically a champagne preservation system. You can hear like
so. It is the champagne. It's the same thing as a champagne.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I just want to see if it works. And I think the exciting thing about this, obviously, is that we can.
Doesn't that sound good?
I love
we'll
it.
Do another one. Come on.
That was three.
I think we
that was
pour
all
those.
Yeah.
So, what do you want? I think we should probably start with the sour.
Let Jeff pick.
Jeff.
Start with the sour.
Okay.
All right.
Here we go.
All right. While you're doing that, I want to ask Jeff about... So you said you're always going to have a draft sour.
Well, we're gonna do our best to provide a draft sour. Always having it is a tall order.
Last time you were on, you brought your Berliner Weiss,
mm-hmm.
Which was great. And you said that was an easy... I don't want to say easy beer, but that's a good beer to make when you're just starting out. How do you describe that beer?
Well, that beer is very simple, right? And that, I don't know... the way I described it the first time, it was the first beer I brewed when I started at Peekskill in November, sort of because I knew it was going to be a long brew day and doesn't need an extensive boil, doesn't need a long maturation time, and turned out pretty well. We're up to three in 6 months, so it's selling at a pretty decent clip, and I think I remember telling you guys that, you know, most of our regular customers had never heard of such a beer, Berliner Weiss, and it does pretty well. And the kitchen staff has done a great job of making different house-made syrups to flavor it with. And there's been a couple of real terrific ones. Like there was a peach ginger that was just awesome. But so that's sort of like maybe a prototype for what we're gonna try to offer. And the way we're going to build the brewery, there will be some physical features that will allow us to do a quick open fermentation, like maybe a weekend of open fermentation with lactobacillus and then blending to a certain level of sour. I'm still sort of playing with how it's going to actually go, and, you know, it'll take some tinkering to get it right, but I think we will be able to offer a draft sour in pretty decent volume.
And you're going to have a small barrel program as well?
Yeah, you saw the cellar there. Yeah. I think we're going to focus mostly on wine barrels, and I think we can get maybe 60 barrels in that cellar. And then we'll just see. We'll see. We've got, like you've seen, you know, for now we have plenty of extra space before we build out the third and fourth floors. But hopefully we will have a pretty cool program there where we do maybe quarterly releases. We're buying a really cool tri-block filler corker cager.
Nice.
So we're going to do some small runs of specialty bottles.
Available at the brewery.
Yeah, it'll be brewery only.
Good.
Cool. Hey, let's do a quick run around. You mentioned before you're checking out draft systems. And from talking to different people, there's a lot of different draft systems, whether you have a brew pub or a bar or a home system. Mm-hmm. Dave, what do you guys have at Blind Tiger?
Pipe Dreams put together, it's sort of like a mishmash of stuff. And so I wouldn't say it's any one particular make. You know, Dave Moore, the owner of Pipe Dreams, sort of puts together his, I mean, you can get a regular system from him, but he also does
so what's
kind of
custom?
His own. Yeah,
do you have different
custom
pressures or different diameters of lines?
Different lines, restrictor lines, and so you can pour some of those hard-to-pour beers. And
so, like, what, do you have particular lines that are set for particular styles?
Yes.
Like what?
Well, so, let's say a Cantillon, which sometimes can be harder to pour, can be a little foamy. So we have lines that we can, you know, make that a lot easier. Schneider Weiss, Aventinus.
So Schneider Weiss, you need often like a thinner line, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
A different pressure.
Right.
So do you have individual pressure per line?
You push it at higher pressure. Yes.
Wow.
Exactly. So you can push it at 35 PSI and, you know, whatever you need to do.
And what do you guys have at Queen's Kick Show? What kind of draft system?
Well, we have five tap lines. One of them, we have seven now. And Dave Moore from Pipe Dreams put ours together as well. But they're all the same restrictor lines, basically. Just, you know, we basically talked about our beer program with him, and he, you know, devised the system to best suit what we were planning on pouring. So,
and Jeff, what are you guys going to do at the brew pub?
Well, the trick with ours is that it'll be two different locations of dispense, and one of them will be 18 feet higher than the other. So you have to make up for that pressure drop, and so it'll have pumps in it to get the beer to the second, pumps and fobbers.
I mean, we do that too at Chimney's number 43. There's a glycol system that pumps it. And also, so, like, I was in Kilmeyer's, an old, for New York, an old beer bar way down in the south of Staten Island. And he's got it set up the old school way, where his bar is over his keg room, and the lines are just stainless steel, and he's got simple gas that pushes it through. There's no other system.
Yeah, I mean, that would be ideal, and that would be the case if we were just dispensing only at the brewery bar, where the serving tanks will be right on the other side of the cold box wall to the bar, very short run. But then we'll have a sort of a convoluted 40 or 60 foot run to the upstairs bar.
You know, in my old bar, and I literally had party keg systems, where the old school system was just, you'd have like a little CO2, you'd have the keg, and it'd run through, you'd have coils that were always iced. And that's how the beer got cold.
How old are you, Jimmy?
Yeah, I'm up there, but
you start to run the numbers on this stuff, and the losses just to foaming on a bad system are crazy. I mean,
yeah, I can't even watch like someone pour from a bad system when I'm at somebody else's place. I'm like, oh, it's just too painful. Because the beer is extremely expensive right now.
Well, this is the room of experts, people. If you're out there, you got Dave Broderick, Jeff O'Neill, and our newbies here from Queen's Kick Show. So, you know, you can write us in at any time, and there's a lot of questions we can answer for you. But our time's running out, and we're going to say a few closing remarks. The Good Brew Seal, which is our buddy, and goodbrewseal.com. In Brooklyn, it's the week of the Brooklyn Beer Summit. There's some cool things. Saturday, I was at Beercraft with Ben Granger. He had a backyard cask and oyster fest. It was awesome. But check out greatbrewers.com and goodbrewseal.com for more information on the Brooklyn Beer Summit. Next week, April 25th at Jimmy's number 43, a very cool thing, Beerituality. It's a beer movie by a Jeff Cialetti from Beverage World. You can come check that out. And Wednesday, tomorrow night, there's Lavula Palooza. Mike Lavulu, our favorite union beer rep, it's his birthday. He's getting all the lines. How'd you let him do that, Dave?
It wasn't my
Blind
idea.
Tiger's giving him all his lines. You're going to have a huge bill, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And next week, Wednesday, Stag's Head is coming up, a Ballast Point event. And Jimmy's number 43 next weekend is the April Sours weekend, year two. There's everything from Limited Cuvée to Jacobins, all the Bee United and Shelton Brother imports. That's going to be a fun weekend. And there'll be a beer dinner Monday, April 30th. It's an all-duck dinner. It's all duck with sours. It'll be good. It's only $45. Jimmy's number 43.com. In closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. All right, and thanks to Dave, Jeff, Ben, Jen, and Bradley for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. There's also a guy here named Mike. He's the Ambad. What is it, Jeff?
It's the Ambadassador.
Ambadassador.
Brewery Ambadassador.
Peekskill, yep. Brewery. All right, and I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator, Brett Thompson. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Should help me explain, as a matter of fact, I like beer.